I'm Charlotte. I'm reporting from Cannes Film Festival 2013. We're currently at the Netherlands launch for some new film site. I'm currently with Lancelot, who is a up-and-coming director, producer. He has a few shorts in Cannes Film Festival. And William Cameron from Gamma Studios from Vancouver.
Actually, Toronto.
Toronto. I'm sorry to
mistake. Which, by the way, is pronounced with two T's. Just so that you know, Toronto has two T's. Unless you're from Toronto, in which you say Toronto.
We're getting an odd history lesson here. That's very
May I just intervene there, please? I have two feature films over here, not short films. Thank you.
I'm very sorry. This is why we're here doing this interview. So, Lance, tell us about your two feature films.
Well, I've got one film called Internal, which I produced. Just finished editing and completed it this year. It's looking for distribution. Stars fantastic actor called Peter Greenall and directed by Lee Hursty. We're looking for distribution on that. And also another film I've got over here is Exorcism, a horror, real-life camera one, which tells the story of a film crew in their last final hour before they're all killed. And I'm also over here with a third film called The Hunted, which we have a teaser for and we're looking for funding for, which may
Perfect.
Star... the lovely actress, Charlotte Fortune.
Hey, and that would be me. Well, this is very exciting. So are you enjoying your time in Canada?
Oh, I'm with two wonderful people at the moment. It's fantastic. I've met this fantastic director from America who knows his stuff.
Canada.
He's been there too.
Right, let's pass this on to the beautiful William Cameron from Gamma Studios. William, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're here to do.
Well, I don't think I can follow that up. I mean, his pitches were so spot on. The only problem might be that The Hunted, I believe that there is, in fact, a film here being shown called The Hunted by a Canadian director named Vincenzo Natali, who you might know from a movie called Cube. I don't know if you ever saw Cube.
I've seen Cube. They did a few sequels to that as well.
Indeed, Hypercube.
It sounds very exciting. Are you enjoying your time in Cannes?
Of course. I love it. J'adore la France.
Oh, j'adore. Have you spent your time wisely? Have you been to some exciting parties, met some exciting people, famous faces?
I've met some incredibly interesting, wonderful people.
Amazing.
I haven't been partying too heavily. Actually, I've just been enjoying it. I've been kicking back. I haven't been, like, super aggressive, but you should be.
I have been. I've been here for one day. This is my second day. Today is the 21st. This is a screening of our film, The Pink Marble Egg. It's been screened at 8 o'clock tonight at the Greater Albion at Grade 5.
And it
so
sounds
currently,
wonderful.
The sun is shining. The sun is beaming. I should currently be going to the car to get ready and put on my glad rags. But it's been amazing meeting you both. This has been a beautiful telephone link. Have you enjoyed your time?
Absolutely.
Oh, most definitely.
And can we look forward to seeing you again in Cannes 2014?
Good Lord, expect to see me at the reception at 7-ish.
Perfect, and on the red carpet, obviously.
There you go.
It may be Sundance for me next year, I'm afraid.
Amazing. Thank you, and peace out, A-Town, to Cannes 2013.
Yes, well, there we are, Charlotte Fortune. Sort of brave effort there. I think she did spectacularly well. First solo location report, obviously, from the Cannes Film Festival. It is Cannes, not Cannes. I think there's another piece where she starts for it. Anyway, I'm not gonna nitpick at this stage. A little morning to Ed Wellman, who is listening to the show whilst he's driving in. He might well have arrived. Anyway, good morning, Ed. Thank you for your kind comments. Time now for this button.
From international who's who to CNN. From film criticism to royalty. From South Africa to London, and now to the midweek drive on Siren FM, it's Richard Fitzwilliams.
And I'm sure, Richard, you've had those times in an interview where you say, so you're a good director, you've got a couple of shorts in here, and the director turns around and says, no, actually, I've got a couple of features here, actually, not just shorts, I've got a couple of features on board. Bless her.
We all do it, you know.
Exactly.
I think the most extraordinary experience I saw, though, with an interviewee... being, shall we say, a little difficult, was actually with the great Orson Welles, and appeared in the uncut version when Welles was being interviewed and was told that his Othello was flawed. When he actually started laughing at the interviewer, now that is an experience I would like to to undergo.
Well, certainly he did have his way of actually coping with the critics, did Senior Wells. Touch of Evil possibly just sort of just worked into its own way. Clearly, Cannes Film Festival is with us. Philip Herdwood has got a short movie entered in there as well. We heard from Charlotte Fortune. We might hear a little bit, a few other clips from Charlotte and sort of things she's been doing over in Cannes whilst, I think, multitasking really in a wonderful way. I mean, not only has she got the movie The Pink Marble Egg that's out there, talking about obviously working on another piece called The Hunted, and life continues. But the Coen brothers have apparently been acclaimed yet again, Richard.
Yes, they have. And this is an exciting film because its title, though, curiously, Inside Llewyn Davis, about the New York folk music scene in the 1960s. I mean, this has had critics raving. Despite the weather, the facts of the matter are that the Coen brothers have not only done it again, but so has Soderbergh. In fact, we're shortly to see in early June a fascinating movie, Behind the Candelabra, also released in the competition at Cannes. Important to stress there are 20 films which compete for the coveted Palme d'Or. And then there are another 20 selected a rather curious category called Un Certain Regard. This is one of those in competition. Behind the Candelabra, we have Michael Douglas playing Liberace and Matt Damon playing his partner. And it really will be absolutely riveting to see his private life, which he guarded so fiercely, revealed.
Well, you might say, in the terms of Liberace, L'Âge d'Or, a golden age, a whole range of things happening there. But maybe in the 17th century it was a golden age, which segues us over to the Rijksmuseum and a celebration of the 17th century. You see what we did there, Richard? Sort of just, it took the sort of cinematic line and moved into the art museum routine.
Very, very cleverly. I must just quickly mention New Alexander Payne film, Nebraska, new Roman Polanski film, Venus in Fur, Asghar Farhadi, of course, did A Separation, a new film, The Past. There's such an exciting lineup at Cannes. Also, incidentally, Jessica Chastain was the one to host the 50th anniversary, would you believe, of the notorious epic for which I had a soft spot when I was a good deal younger, Cleopatra.
Well, you see, it just goes to... Have you been to Cannes yourself, Richard, by the way?
I have never been to Cannes,
really?
I have to say. I
think that's an outrageous scenario. We need to address that immediately. We normally get a couple of folk that actually sort of go along that whole thing. Although, one might also say, do you really want to cope with all that clinking of champagne, etc.? We'll get another clip before...
Oh, I think you'd want to cope with the champagne.
Do you think so?
You could get hold of it.
Right, well,
the point is, of course, that if you go to Cannes, you do have to have a purpose, because those who go, the high-profile individuals, all those also who seek... I mean, Cannes is, of course, wonderful for business, for film business, a showcase for European films, and also European cinema as an art form, and launching new films. But if you don't know anyone, or if you're, so to speak, a bit of a hanger-on, be careful of Cannes.
Richard, you would never be a hanger-on. You would be an officially designated midweek driver reporter. Listen, I tell you what, we're going to be talking about the Rijksmuseum. But I think
we are indeed, and this is, in fact, simply extraordinary. I mean, it is one of the great museums, I'd say, of all time. I mean, this 400-year celebration of the Amsterdam Canal District, they made 2013 a very, very special year, because first we had, of course, the Dutch royal investiture, and secondly, I spent a good deal of my trip in Amsterdam in Rijksmuseum. Part of the commemorations when Queen Beatrix abdicated, she held a dinner. This was the final evening. In fact, in the hall where the very, very famous Rembrandt Night Watch is displayed, and very, very clever too, because they haven't put other Rembrandts around it. What they've done is to illustrate its brilliance by placing it alone, and around it are the sort of works that were expected, those by other artists which pall beside the master. Just imagine what the fabulous banquet would actually have been like. But what is extraordinary in this museum, you have something that the Louvre doesn't do, and you have something that a lot of British museums don't do. Firstly, when you have queues in front of a particular painting, they manage to come up with a system which makes for comfortable viewing. Somehow or other, miraculously, in front of, say, Vermeer's Milkmaid, you might have 50 people in front of it, you might have 60 or 70, the huge queues when I was there. And it wasn't hot and claustrophobic. It was airy, it was pleasant, you had to wait your turn, certainly, but nonetheless, this was an absolute triumph, because when you got to the painting, let me stress this, because I really feel very strongly about it, probably some of the fault lies initially with the museums in Berlin. I noticed the same recently in Lisbon, and that is this business of putting the descriptions and the history of the various artifacts or paintings or whatever they were near the floor. So you come into the museum standing upright.
You get backache, Richard. Quite clearly, you get backache. Or you can crouch down, but either way, it's not good for the actual consumption of quality art.
And that is precisely why they've learnt here the way to do it, both for children of a reasonable height and also for adults, is to put it where you can comfortably see it.
Exactly.
And what you see in the golden age between the 16th and 17th century, the Dutch intrepid explorers, it has to be said, linked, I'm afraid, to the slave trade, but also to expansionism, the colonies, but also, again, their fleet. It's very, very heavy emphasis is laid on Dutch sea power. You can't forget that they sailed up the Medway and destroyed the English fleet at the time of Charles II. We're reminded of that. But it's the numbers of masterpieces. Of course, Rembrandt is wonderfully well represented, and indeed I went to the Rembrandt House too, which is absolutely fascinating. But also you've got this extraordinary collection. You've got the Vermeers, you've got the amazing number of works dealing with maritime warfare, the Van der Velde brothers, who incidentally are buried in St. James's Piccadilly, I happen to
We'll go and check out their tomb before too long, etc. Richard, let's just pause for the moment, because I want to because I can tell you that you're on a roll here, and it's wonderful. We've got a little bit of time to actually work through this, because we're trying to juxtapose, as we're well aware, the delights of the 17th century, 18th century, Rembrandt, the Rijksmuseum, etc., with obviously the launch this week of the Cannes Film Festival. This next little piece that's coming up, which again, Charlotte actually put together for us, again, it's raw, but it's got a certain sort of je ne sais quoi about the whole thing. Speaking with a South African filmmaker, and you might like to just run your ear over this one, Richard, from the perspective of something it reveals about the relative strengths of the pavilions of South Africa versus the pavilions of Great Britain. Are you ready for this?
Yes, I'm ready.
Well, champagne glasses at the ready, and we'll say bonjour or even good afternoon.
Well, I'm going to have a sip, because...
Good afternoon, this is Charlotte reporting from the Cannes 2013 Film Festival. Today I have with me Paul Whiffin, the magnificent director, and Tony, the magnificent director, also. We are currently sat in...
the South African Pavilion.
The South African Pavilion.
They have a better budget for chairs than the British Pavilion.
I hope you can hear that. We're sat whilst the sun is setting on the beautiful water, soaking up... Well, the cold rays, drinking champagne, ka-ching. Paul Whiffin, how do you feel about the Cannes Film Festival? How is it panning out for you?
Yeah, no, it's good. Of course, we've just had some technical issues with projecting the film. It amazes me that you can make a Blu-ray and a DVD that work fine on every domestic player, but when you turn up at a film festival and they have some piece of kit that costs £20,000... it doesn't play properly. So we had a nervous 15 minutes, but we solved the problem.
And it's so turned out for the best. They're currently sat in there whilst we're sat in the sunset drinking champagne.
They're in the movie.
In the magnificent The Pink Marble Egg.
Indeed. And we're going to go back in about an hour's time and see what the reaction was like.
and we'll find out about the reaction as the whole thing proceeds. But yes, that's the screening of The Pink Marble Egg. Now, a couple of points there, Richard. Number one, obviously we won't go into the technical side of things, but South Africa seems to have a better budget for chairs than the British Film Pavilion. What's going on?
Well, what's going on, I think what you're alluding to is, in fact, the rather sad fact in Cannes that there isn't a single British film in a major competition. I think I have a horrifying feeling that you are getting round
to
that. I'd hope to draw a veil over, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very sad.
Well, I suppose in many ways The Pink Marble Egg, which is actually James Bond's spoof featuring Charlotte Fortune, channeling the spirit of Britt Eklund as Mary Goodnight in the particular piece, that I think was obviously there whilst obviously some of the filmmakers independent there they are. And as you can tell, there were technical issues as well that Paul Whiffin and company were actually having. Still, I think the champagne was okay, so that was nice. I still can't quite work out why when the interview started it was good afternoon and then they were actually in the sunset, but never mind, you know, what time, it just scoots by.
Anyway. It does indeed, especially here's a way of getting time. Time gallops with all. I'm returning briefly to the Rijksmuseum because there are one or two other museums I must pass on to. The Van Gogh Museum has also been restored, by the way. Between 1100 and 1600, there's a particular floor which is devoted to 500 years of history. Rather unlike the Golden Age, where you've got this extraordinary, the sheer brilliance of it, not only in Holland, but also most particularly in this huge section of the museum. If you take 500 years, it's pretty tough because you've really got to absorb or attempt to absorb such an amount, and that does need more time than I had. And then, of course, there are various other centuries. You've got one of the biggest museums in the world, and you really got it brilliantly. And may I remind you, here's a question for you, I must throw it at you, who at the Battle of Waterloo was, in fact, Dutch and very famous and known as the Hero of Waterloo?
I don't know who at the Battle of Waterloo was indeed Dutch and very famous and known as the Hero of Waterloo.
I don't think most of us do know, and I didn't know. The Prince of Orange is the answer, which, of course, links with the biggest battle painting in the museum, taking up an entire wall.
Precisely.
Absolutely extraordinary, and the museum is extraordinary, and there's also a collection of, whether it's models of ships, whether it's Delftware, whether it's fashion materials, whether it's arms. I could go on and on
you
and
could,
on.
But we have to also say good morning to Nikki Wells, who's listening live now to Siren FM, morning edition. Thank you. Well done, Nikki. That was a wee while ago. And Sarah Bullimore, who has also passed on good morning. Well, it's important to actually keep the contributors happy, Richard, because that's the whole joy of live broadcasting. You get joys from podcasting as well, but not quite to the same extent.
And you get joys from the reopening of the renovated Van Gogh Museum. I can't tell you how brilliantly it's done.
I can see that, you know, we've moved into all sorts of ways. You know, initially I thought when Ed Wellman, because he's got an exam today, he's sorting out his law stuff, so he's heading off doing wonderful things, etc. And obviously Katie Grimmison is back in Birmingham, and some of the other team, as we know, Charlotte Fortune is in Cannes, etc. I thought, it's just obviously yours truly, Alex Leftug, in the studio, but I figured, yeah, we can get this show rocking and rolling, can't we? And we have, you know, it's amazing.
It's the fact that the museum, and it previously, briefly, was at the Hermitage whilst it was being renovated. Previously, it didn't really do him justice, and I saw this brilliant exhibition at the Royal Academy, which had Van Gogh's notebooks, and then it had some sketches, and then it had the finished works. And this really brought this absolutely amazing genius so brilliantly to life. And Van Gogh at work, I mean, you see his inspiration, Delacroix, the Japanese artist.
He was just basically sort of phenomenal, particularly I thought when he actually met Matt Smith's incarnation of Doctor Who, but there we are.
There is always that, but may I recommend this museum? It is simply brilliant, and then of course, I mean, there's no end to it. Peter the Great, I had a very special link with Amsterdam, the famous Russian Tsar, brutal, but he was determined to take his country from the Middle Ages, and he spent a good deal of time in Amsterdam, and studied basically the basics, how you built a navy, how you westernized a nation. Very interesting. There's a wonderful exhibition at the Hermitage about Peter. It can't plus over the fact he executed people personally a few years ago at the...
It happens. Sometimes it happens. It's unfortunate, but there we are. That's,
you don't
that's
do
that.
It personally, I hope.
I would hope not. No, exactly. It's just a matter of routine. Taking us from Cannes, the Coen brothers, through consideration of South Africa, chairs, through to the Rijksmuseum, over to Peter the Great, I think has been quite phenomenal. Still to come, we've got TV gardener Tommy Walsh, who's due to be joining us. We've got writer Ian Lennox. We've also got a key word with Eric Chappell, the creator of Rising Damp, and a whole heap of others will be lined up. We might also be heading off to Sardinia to talk to William Sitwell. There's a packed show ahead, Richard.
I must, however, before I'm moved,
go on,
shifted aside to spot a few of the, just to mention a couple of beautiful museums, because I went to a very large number. I'm always fascinated, as you know, by houses that are kept up in the particular style they used to be in previous centuries.
You're not a fan of the mock Tudor notions, are you, really? I mean, you don't
well, not really. No. It wouldn't really grab me, exactly. Unless I have to say that it was actually lived in by the same family. Oh. And unless, of course, they'd kept the original furnishings, and unless, of course, they'd... there's nothing mock about the Van Loon Museum, because the same family is still there, that was here in the 19th century, and that, in fact, well, they backed the right side of Waterloo, so that...
And as we would say, Richard, Van Loon by name, but not by nature.
By nature, they've refurbished the coach house, the garden looks beautiful, and inside you've got family portraits that, it also includes some wonderful De Laszlos. Mm. I mean, it's a glorious place, and I love it.
Clearly, we need to get a location report set up there, so we'll have to set our OB people, outside broadcast folk, on the case.
The current Mrs. Van Loon is the lady-in-waiting. Mm. We saw a picture of her at the investiture. Cool. And they've had links with the monarchs, and they're these glorious signed photographs of European royalty. Mary of Romania was one of them. Quite interesting. My grandfather used to work in her hospitals in the First World War. And then if you take a little walk down the canals, there's the Villet Holthuysen Museum, another museum kept in the style, and they're renovating.
I think we need a cliffhanger ending. We need to return to this next week. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us today?
Well, it's been absolutely riveting. I've been, as it were, half in Amsterdam and half
in
wishing
Cannes.
I were in Cannes.
Clinking the champagne. There we
are. Yeah, that's champagne, but it's a wonderful lineup at Cannes. And let's forget to mention that Steven Spielberg is, of course, the president of the jury.
Exactly. Coming up next on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Siren 107.3 FM, Ian Lennox. But first, Petula Clark.